ended. The bell cord is rotten, the gutter sprouts broken. What fire from heaven could have fallen there? By what decree has salt been sown on this dwelling? Has God been mocked here? Or was France betrayed? These are the questions we ask ourselves. Reptiles crawl over it but give no reply. This empty and deserted house is a vast enigma of which the answer is known to none. It was formerly a little domain, held in fief, and is known as La Grande Bretèche. During my stay at Vendôme, where Desplay had left me in charge of a rich patient, the sight of this strange dwelling became one of my keenest pleasures. Was it not far better than a ruin? Certain memories of indisputable authenticity attach themselves to a ruin. But this house, still standing, though being slowly destroyed by an avenging hand, contained a secret, an unrevealed thought. At the very least, it testified to a caprice. More than once in the evening, I boarded the hedge, run wild, which surrounded the enclosure. I braved scratches. I got into this ownerless garden, this plot which was no longer public or private. I lingered there for hours, gazing at the disorder. I would not, as the price of the story to which this strange scene no doubt was due, have asked a single question of any gossiping native. On that spot, I wove delightful romances and abandoned myself to little debauches of melancholy which enchanted me. If I had known the reason, perhaps quite commonplace, of this neglect, I should have lost the unwritten poetry which intoxicated me. To me, this refuge represented the most various phases of human life, shadowed by misfortune, sometimes the peace of the graveyard without the dead who speak in the language of epitaphs. One day, I saw in it the home of lepers, another, the house of the Atreidae. But above all, I found there provincial life, with its contemplative ideas, its hourglass existence. I often wept there. I never laughed. More than once, I felt involuntary terrors as I heard overhead the dull hum of the wings of some hurrying wood pigeon. The earth is dank. You must be on the watch for lizards, vipers, and frogs, wandering about with the wild freedom of nature. Above all, you must have no fear of cold. For in a few moments you feel an icy cloak settle on your shoulders, like the Commendatore's hand on Don Giovanni's neck. One evening, I felt a shudder. The wind had turned an old rusty weathercock, and the creaking sounded like a cry from the house. At the very moment when I was finishing a gloomy drama to account for this monumental embodiment of woe, I returned to my inn, lost in gloomy thoughts. When I had supped, the hostess came into my room with an air of mystery and said, "Monsieur, here is Monsieur Regnon." "Who is Monsieur Regnon?" "What, sir? Do you not know Monsieur Regnon? Well, that's odd," said she, leaving the room. On a sudden, I saw a man appear, tall, slim, dressed in black, hat in hand, who came in like a ram ready to butt his opponent, showing a receding forehead, a small pointed head, and a colorless face on the hue of a glass of dirty water. You would have taken him for an usher. The stranger wore an old coat, much worn at the seams, but he had a diamond in his shirt frill and gold rings in his ears. "Monsieur," said I, "whom have I the honor of addressing?" He took a chair, placed himself in front of my fire, put his hat on my table, and answered while he rubbed his hands, "Dear me, it is very cold. Monsieur, I am Monsieur Regnon." I was encouraging myself by saying to myself, "Seek." "I am," he went on, "notary to Vendôme." "I am delighted to hear it, monsieur," I exclaimed, "but I am not in a position to make a will for reasons best known to myself." "One moment," said he, holding up his hand as though to gain silence. "Allow me, monsieur, allow me. I am informed that you sometimes go to walk in the garden of La Grande Bretèche." "Yes, monsieur." "One moment," said he, repeating his gesture. "That constitutes a misdemeanor. Monsieur, as executor under the will of the late Comtesse de Marais, I come in her name to beg you to discontinue the practice. One moment. I am not a Turk, and I do not wish to make a crime of it, and besides, you are free to be ignorant of the circumstances which compel me to leave the finest mansion in Vendôme to fall into ruin. Nevertheless,